Good morning and greetings to each of you in Jesus' name, and happy Mother's Day as well to you mothers here. Mothers are a tremendous blessing, as was already mentioned or discussed, and we're all here because of a mother. Now, all of you children here, I believe, have your mothers here today. Most of the rest of us do not have our mothers here, but we're still here because of our mothers, every last one of us. And so I think it is valuable and important to have a day when we specifically focus on mothers, but I'm assuming that most mothers are the same in this regard, that if you don't treat her with honor and respect as your wife and as your mother the rest of the year, the flowers and the candy and the cards that you give her on Mother's Day will not be as meaningful, or will be simply a reminder of how you treat her the rest of the year. So Mother's Day is only as good as you take care of your mother and you honor and respect your mother the rest of the year. Thank you, Claire, for your devotions. I don't want to take anything from what you shared, but I was thinking about the fact that Mother's Day does bring a lot of mixed emotions to people, people's responses to Mother's Day. Some because their mother is no longer living, their mother has passed on. Some because they're not called to marriage, or others don't have the ability to conceive and bear children, and Claire mentioned all of these. And women are given the natural desire of motherhood, to be a mother. But motherhood, what I think we need to remember is that motherhood is not the highest calling. Motherhood is not the highest calling. And it is a very high calling. And for some people, for some ladies, it is their highest calling. But it's not necessarily the ultimate calling. The ultimate calling for mothers, or for ladies and for men, for all of us, is to be whatever God wants is called us to be. And so for some ladies, that call is to be a wife without being a mother, as they wait on God's timing. For some ladies, it's the call to a life of singlehood. And God has a purpose in all of that when we don't understand it, and that is the challenge for us to understand why that is God's will for us, or for, if you're in that situation, for you. But if God had not called you to motherhood, remember that God has a calling for you, and to find God's purpose in that, regardless of what it may be. And if we're not willing to trust God's purpose and God's timing, we can foil God's perfect plan for us. And so the best place for any one of us is to be in God's will for our life. And being a faithful child of God is the highest call that any of us can answer. For a message, we want to look at a mother in the Bible and make some observations that hopefully can be an encouragement to you as mothers. And now, it's also true that in a group like this, mothers are actually in the minority, but we're going to focus on mothers. If we focus on them a small percentage of the Sundays, it's okay, because even if they are a minority. But I've titled the message, Jochebed, a Mother of Faith. And you can turn to Exodus chapter 2. And I'm sure you recognize that name as the mother of Moses. And in Exodus chapter 2, we don't even know her name. Her name isn't even given. We know her name because of a couple verses later, one later in Exodus chapter 6 and verse 20, and then a verse in Numbers 26, where it gives her name as Jochebed. But here in Exodus chapter 2, we're not given her name. But I want to read Exodus chapter 2, verses 1 to 10. And there went a man of the house of Levi and took to wife a daughter of Levi. And the woman conceived and bare a son. And when she saw him, that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months. And when she could not longer hide him, she took for him an ark of bulrushes and daubed it with slime and with pitch and put the child therein. And she laid it in the flags by the river's brink. And his sister stood afar off to wit what would be done to him. And the daughter of Pharaoh came down to wash herself at the river, and her maidens walked along by the riverside. And when she saw the ark among the flags, she sent her maid to fetch it. And when she had opened it, she saw the child. And behold, the babe wept, and she had compassion on him, and said, "This is one of the Hebrew's children." Then said his sister to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call to thee a nurse of the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for thee?" And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Go." And the maid went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said unto her, "Take this child away and nurse it for me, and I will give thee thy wages." And the woman took the child and nursed it, and the child grew. And she brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she called his name Moses. And she said, "Because I drew him out of the water." Very familiar story. Of the children of Israel and their bondage in Egypt here. And we live in a time and a place and a world that's filled with sin and evil. We're not in bondage. We're not slaves like the children of Israel were. But for many people around us, children are a nuisance or they're an unwanted accident. And so children are sacrificed on the altar of their careers or their selfish pursuit of pleasure. And many unborn boys and girls are thrown into the proverbial Nile because their parents don't want their lives to be overcome by a child. In this story, we have an evil king who feared that this growing slave population was going to outnumber and overwhelm his people. They started out as a very small group, and over the 400 years, they have grown to be a large population. And I don't know what the population of Egypt was at that time, but oftentimes we say the children of Israel could have easily been 1 million people. That's a significant crowd of people in a country. And so he made this rule, this law, that every boy child should be killed. The boys were the ones that would grow up to be soldiers, potentially. And so if there's no boys, then we don't have to worry about an armed uprising. And so if you had a baby boy, he had needed to be killed. And so imagine if you were a husband and a wife during this time period and you realize that you're expecting a baby. And so what should be a time of joy and anticipation would be overshadowed with this evil decree. What if it's a baby boy? What are we going to do? How are we going to respond? How are we going to relate to this? Do you think they prayed, expectant mothers and fathers prayed earnestly that this baby would be a girl so they didn't have to deal with that? I don't know. We don't know that. But what did other parents do here? How many infants were thrown into the river? How many infant baby boys were torn from their mother's arms and thrown into the river? We don't know that, but I'm sure there was many, many. Josephus writes that Pharaoh had also decreed that if anyone disobeyed him and tried to hide their baby boy, that the whole family would be destroyed. They would be punished by killing the whole family. And so that's the world that existed during Jochebed's pregnancy here. And we have a number of years, we don't know how many years, between verses 1 and 2. Verse 1 says we have this man that took a wife. And in verse 2, we have the woman conceived and bare a son, which was Moses. We know that they already had two children, Miriam and Aaron. Miriam being the oldest. Aaron, we know, was 3 years older than Moses. And we find that in a few verses later. In Exodus chapter 7, verse 7, where it gives Aaron and Moses ages, and Moses was 40 and Moses was 80 and Aaron was 83. And so it was 3 years. But we don't know how much older Miriam was, but it's often assumed that at the time of Moses' birth, she was somewhere in that 6 to 8 or 9 year old range. Again, that's based off of legend and Jewish tradition and so forth. But again, we don't know that. But it's also assumed that Aaron was born prior to this king's decree. And so he was 3 years old. It was after his birth that the king made this decree. And now she was expecting another child. And what if it was going to be a baby boy? What would they do? And we know from the story what she did. When the baby was born, she performed this courageous act of defiance by hiding him 3 months. For 3 months she hid him. Now imagine, you know how it is when you have a new baby. You want to show the grandparents, you take pictures, you post it on your status maybe. You let people know because you're excited, you have a baby, this is exciting. You show everybody. But they couldn't do that. They had to keep this completely hidden. How did she take care of the baby? How did she wash the baby clothes? How did she wash the dirty diapers? They didn't have a washing machine in a back corner. She had to go to the river and wash the baby clothes. How did she do that? There's a lot of dynamics here if you think about what all goes into caring for a newborn that she had to do and keep this a secret. And they didn't live in a nice big, 4,000 square foot house, with lots of secret spots to hide it in. This was a hut. And so what happens when the baby cries? All the neighbors can hear. So there could be no signs whatsoever that there was an infant in the house. And in addition, it was to the agents of Pharaoh that would go through looking for babies. It's also very likely that there was internal spies. And history, in any story of history, where there was an oppressor and an oppressed, there was always a small segment of the oppressed people that would turn against their own in order to curry favor with the authorities. And so there was likely other Jewish people that weren't above reporting their Jewish neighbor. And so she couldn't trust the people around her either. But she hid the baby for 3 months. But she could only do it for 3 months. She said she could not hide, no longer hide him. And so she made this little ark. And in an act of faith, she obeyed Pharaoh and she put her baby boy in the Nile River, where Pharaoh said baby boys were supposed to go. But she did this by tucking him into a lovingly crafted basket and placing it strategically in the river where she knew that the royalty came down to take their baths. Now, if she really wanted to hide her son, she would have chosen a quiet, secluded spot. But no, she put it where she knew that people would come and find him. And in doing so, she didn't only provide for the possibility that somebody would find him and have mercy on him, she also protected her family because there was no way to trace this baby to her family. And so she was protecting her family as well. Because if Pharaoh discovered that they had hid their baby for 3 months, the family could have been destroyed as well. And so she was protecting her family in that way as well. But her mother heart needed to know the outcome. And so she posted Miriam to keep an eye on the basket to see what was going to happen. And Moses' parents are included in Hebrews 11 and verse 23, where it says, "By faith Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents," or we could say by his parents, "because they saw he was a proper child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandment." They were not afraid of the king's commandment. It took great faith and courage to not fear the commandment and to disobey the king. And so, like I said, the title was Jochebed, a Mother of Faith. And so we want to look at a few attributes of mothers of faith. Number one, a mother of faith obeys God's call to motherhood. Motherhood is not necessarily a popular thing in today's society. In 1970, the average age of a first-time mother was 21. In 2023, the average age of a first-time mother was 27 and a half. And the article that was giving those statistics says, these statistics highlight the ongoing trend of delayed motherhood in the U.S., influenced by various social, economic, and cultural factors. And we know that. We see that in the world around us. There's a lot of social and economic factors that cause people to either delay having a child or not having a child at all, or performing abortions to prevent having a child. But a mother of faith obeys the call to motherhood. If God calls you to motherhood, you embrace that, because that is God's call in your life. And maybe sometimes as a mother, you're tempted to feel like, I'm just a mother. I'm only a mother. Because you think, you look at other people and all that they do and all the things that you can't do because you are a mother. But remember that if God called you to motherhood, that is the highest calling for you. And so accept it, embrace it. Being a mother takes as much or more faith as any other calling. You pour your heart and your soul unselfishly into your child 24/7. Sometimes you despair. Maybe you feel inadequate or inferior. Maybe you're run ragged by preschoolers, and you look at that middle-aged mother kind of jealously, thinking how easy it must be to have teenagers and not have to chase after the preschoolers. And then when you're middle-aged and you're worrying about your teenagers, you question whether you were a good enough mom when they were preschoolers, and you struggle with knowing how to let them go. And so regardless of what stage of life mothers are at, it takes faith. And one stage is not easier than another stage, but God gives grace for whatever stage of family life you're in. You worry about what your child may face. You might worry about how others will treat them. You worry about what the future holds for them. You worry about what decisions they might make. And so it takes faith. Mothers of faith don't give in to fear, but they live courageously because they're convinced of God's calling and convinced of the truth of God's promises. Secondly, a mother of faith sees her children as beautiful. In verse 2 here, it says, she saw that he was a goodly child. And that word goodly is the same word that's used in Genesis 1 in the creation, where it says, and God saw that it was good. God saw that it was good. Same thing here. She saw that her child was good. And in Acts 7, verse 20, I believe this is Peter's sermon, one of Peter's sermons there, it says, in which time Moses was born and was exceeding fair. And in Hebrews 11, the verse we just read, it says he was a proper child. And that word exceeding fair and proper both come from the same Greek word astiosis, which means handsome or fair. And so apparently he was a very beautiful child. But I think it's safe to say that Jochebed would not have done anything differently than she did, even if he would have not been such a goodly child. I don't think that she only spared his life and hid him because he was exceptionally cute. But what mom doesn't think that her baby is the cutest newborn ever? That's only natural. And it should be that way. And so a woman of faith sees her children as beautiful. But I wanted to expand this. She sees her children as beautiful, not just outwardly, but she sees them as persons of value and importance. She sees her children as being created and designed by God for a specific purpose. Each one of her children. And if you have more than one child, you know how each child can be significantly different. They have their own personalities, they have their own characteristics. But a mother loves each one of them equally, and she views each of them as beautiful and as having value and importance. She recognizes that they're a never dying soul. And so keeping that in mind gives mom the strength to endure, no matter what your preschoolers do or what your teenager does. Even when your child doesn't seem so beautiful, she keeps this in mind. And she doesn't give up. A mother of faith doesn't give up. She has a purpose in raising that child because she recognizes that God has a purpose for that child. That child is a treasure to be shaped for God's kingdom and God's work. And she teaches her children what true beauty is. She helps her children understand as they grow and maybe they lose some of that baby cuteness. She helps them understand that beauty, their worth, isn't just in their physical outward beauty. She helps them learn to accept the way God made them, because a mother of faith sees her children as beautiful. Thirdly, a mother of faith does all she can to protect and prepare her child for life. Jochebed did everything she could here. She hid her baby for 3 months, and then she went to all this work to build this ark to provide a safe place for him to float in the river. She wove these bulrushes together, and it says she daubed it with slime. She made sure it was waterproof. It was going to float for as long as it needed to. That took time. That took work. That was another thing that she had to hide from everybody else. But she did it. And then she placed her daughter as a lookout. And how many of you girls are between the ages of 6 and 9? Raise your hand if you're between 6 and 9. There's, what, 4 of you, 5 of you? A few of you? Yes. So now imagine, if you're between 6 and 9, imagine that your mother, imagine first of all that you have a little baby brother. And if you're a 6 to 9 year old girl, you adore your baby brother. And your mother puts him in a little basket out in the river. And you know kind of that this is serious. This is really serious. And your mom says, I want you to kind of hide over here behind this bush, and I want you to keep an eye on that basket and see what happens. Now, imagine you're sitting there and you see this little basket bobbing and you know your little baby brother's in there. How long would you sit there still and quietly? For a while? For a long while, probably? You could probably sit there for a long time. But then imagine you see somebody coming down to the river, and you know it's somebody important, and it's the somebody from the palace. And they come down, and you watch them get the basket, and you wonder, what are they going to do? And then you hear your baby brother start crying. And then what would you do? I don't know. I was never a 6 to 9 year old girl, so I don't know what I would do. But think about that a little bit. Interesting to think about. What would you do? That's what Miriam did here. She did that. So. Her mother had done some pretty significant training in the first years of her life, had taught her obedience and dependability, and also apparently to keep her mouth shut, because if you're a 6 to 9 year old girl and you have a baby brother, you're going to want to show him off, and you're going to want to take care of him, and you're going to want to play with him. But she had understood the seriousness of protecting this little baby brother, and she watched out there, and we know what happened there and what she did then in going to them and saying, shall I go get somebody? But that's not our story here this morning. But the point being that Jochebed here apparently had put a lot of effort into training her child. And that translated into the care and the protection that she could give her newborn son here. And moms pour their entire life and soul into their newborn infant. And you cuddle and you care for that infant. And you know that all too soon, the time's going to come when you have to release that child into the big evil world. And you can't cuddle and care for that child anymore. You can hide your babies from the raging river of life for a time, but the outside influences show up long before you wish they would. And it's true that fathers, you have a significant role and responsibility in being a protector of the family. But moms have a very significant part in preparing and training a child for life. Mom's the earliest influence on their child. Moms spend the greatest amount of time with their children. Who taught you how to get dressed properly? Who taught you how to comb your hair or to brush your teeth? Children, who taught you? Probably your mom, right? I don't remember who taught me, but I'm assuming probably my mom did. Who taught you how to use good manners and how to play together nicely? Mom. Mom does all of that because she's with you all day, and she cares about preparing you for a life of usefulness. And again, dads, that doesn't excuse you. That doesn't let you off the hook. You have to be supportive and assist your children's mother in their teaching and training. Because if you don't, your assistance or your lack thereof is going to have a significant impact on how well your wife can teach. Now there's families where the dad has been less than ideal dad, and the children have turned out phenomenally because the mom has been a very significant teacher in their life. But dads, your support and your help go a long way. And so a mother of faith knows that she can't protect her children from everything that they might possibly face. And so she does her best to give the children a foundation to stand firmly on as they face life. Fourthly, a mother of faith does all she can to influence her child to have faith in God. She does all she can to influence her child to have faith in God. She got her son back from the river for a period of time. How long, we don't know. Again, Jewish tradition would say it was only for a few years, maybe 3 or 4 years. She had just a few years to instill in her son the God of Israel. Not 18 or so years like we often have. But in Hebrews 11, this is what it says about Moses. In Hebrews 11, we have several verses there which record how well Jochebed influenced him in those years that she had. In Hebrews 11, 24, starting verse 24, by faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. He had every opportunity to be a very important person in the Egyptian government. Josephus and some other writers would say that he was actually made general of the army for a period of time. So he had every opportunity to be a very important, powerful, wealthy person. And he gave that up and to come visit his people, and then fled to the wilderness. And so in those few short years that Jochebed had with him, she conveyed to him her faith in God, and she imparted in him that God had a purpose for his life. God had a purpose for his life, and he understood as he grew older that that purpose in life was something different than living in Pharaoh's palace. And mothers, you have just a short period of time to influence your children as well. They might be in your home for 18 or 20 or 25 years, but most of those years, the influence has already been had. The impact has already been had. It's those early formative years that you have to plant seeds in your children's life. Taking time out of your busy day to answer those unlimited questions about life and about nature and about God and about anything else imaginable are never wasted. It's never wasted time. Singing and telling Bible stories plant seed that bears fruit. Excuse me. Many years down the road. Your children know at quite a young age what you consider to be important in your life. Is it a spotless house filled with the latest fads of decor? Is it closets bursting with the latest prints? Your children hear you pray for them? You set the pattern that your children will follow, very likely in life. And again, dads, you're not off the hook on this one either. And it's true that ultimately children have to make their own decisions. Children will make their own decisions. And so sometimes, despite your best efforts, they will make decisions that you wish they wouldn't. And unless you're a mother, you probably cannot grasp how much your decisions, your wrong decisions, grieve your mother. It's been said that a mother's heart is never her own. Bits of it are sown into the souls of her sons and daughters. And so a little part of mother goes with each child, goes with you. You take a little part of mother, and that can't be helped because they're mother. and you're their child because of that love that a mother has for her child. A mother of faith has a great influence on her children. Fifthly, a mother of faith impacts the world through her family. Did Jochebed live to see the deliverance? Was she in the crowd of Israelites as they crossed the Red Sea? We don't know whether she lived long enough to see that or not. But I'm sure that in her wildest imagination, she couldn't ever imagine the great impact that Moses would have on the then known world. In her wildest imagination, she couldn't imagine what was going to happen. The deliverance that was going to be achieved through her son. Mothers, you're probably not raising a Moses that's going to somehow deliver millions of people. But countless godly mothers have raised children who have had significant impact on the world for right and for truth. And you're here, all of us are here because of mothers, and we may not know how far back that line goes, a line of faithful mothers, how far back it goes. But each of us has a long line of mothers in our history. And because of their faithfulness, we are where we are today. And so the impact that when you see, let me say it this way, when you see a family picture of a parents and their children and grandchildren, maybe great-grandchildren, you start to begin to see the impact that that one mother had on all of those people, and that just continues down the line, that impact. And so a mother of faith does impact the world through her family, through the school, through the church, and in your community. An African proverb says, educate a man and you educate an individual. Educate a woman and you educate a nation. That's a little trite maybe, but it's the idea again of mothers have a significant impact on their family and on the continuing generations and on the world around them at that point. You never know how much impact you might have, but you're going to have an impact, whether it's for good or ill, but you're going to have an impact on your children. So a mother of faith impacts the world through her family. God rewarded Jochebed's faith here and spared her son's life because he had a purpose, he had a plan for Moses. And Jochebed was willing to overcome her fear of the king's command and be used of God in this way to hide her son. And we still remember her for this thousands of years later. And so mothers today, as mothers, you've been called to motherhood. And God promises you everything that you need to be a faithful mother, to be a mother of faith. And there are days that are hard. There are disappointments. There are sorrows. There are times when your children don't perform like you wish they would for the 10th time. But mothers of faith continue on, knowing that they have an impact for their child and because they have a burden to prepare their child for a life of service and a life of faithfulness. And so I want to bless each of you mothers today as you answer the call to motherhood, as you teach and inspire and influence your children, as you overcome fear with faith in God, stand firm in God's promises, keep faith and trust in God because God will give you the grace that you need for each day. Let's pray.